when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 49 of Prepping 2.0. This is going to be two topics, but they're kind of related, as we try to have everything related. The two topics are, we're going to have a guest, John Mark, who's a returning guest. He was on a previous episode that has the most number of downloads we've ever had, widely popular. And he talked about who's going to win the Civil War, and we had a great discussion about that. Well, in this episode, his return, he just did a video about what happens after the Civil War, which is as important as who wins is what are you going to do afterwards. And then he's a new prepper, and so he came up with this amazing list of really insightful questions a new prepper has for us. And so we're going to talk about what happens after the Civil War in his video, and then we're also going to answer his questions from, as I describe him, a newbie prepper. So I think this is going to be a great episode. But before I talk about all the greatness, I need to acknowledge the greatness in the room, my co-host and wife, Shelby Gallagher. Say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody. Hello, Glenn. How are you? Hello to our guest as well. Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Hello, John Mark. Shelby is a little bit sleep deprived, and the caffeine is battling with her sleep deprivation. So I think we get better episodes when, Shelby, you're either tired or amped up. It is fun. It's good stuff.
Well, and let me throw this out there too. I had this last week, I had a pretty major oral surgery done. That the swelling's starting to go down. I have 8 stitches in my mouth. I'm pretty jacked up on the ibuprofens too. And it's been an adventure. So we're good. I'm excited that I'm upright. Yeah. Goodness.
Well, Shelby, quick mention for folks about the merch shack. So I guess I should ask the question, what's in the merch shack?
We have always got some cool things in the merch shack. And thank you for all of you who have taken a trip over there. How you get there is you go to our website, prepping2-0.com. There's a tab there that says shop, and it takes you to our merch shack where we have always our I Miss America t-shirts, hoodies. We have the new line of patiently awaiting the collapse stickers and magnets. Should we talk about the magnets? Those are not available yet, are they?
Well, the cat's out of the bag. Meow. Yes, we have patiently awaiting the collapse magnets. We gave them for free to Patreon supporters. We mailed them out goodie bags. Every year, we mail out goodie bags with this free stuff as a way of saying thank you. And all the Patreons, we do that in July, by the way. All the Patreons got the magnets, which are great because you can stick them on a vehicle or whatever. And then when, like, your crazy liberal aunt comes over for Thanksgiving or whatever, you can just pop it right off and not have that awkward conversation. So they're good for that. But, yeah, we got all that going on. I would like to talk, if I may.
Yes.
About PAM radio, P-A-M.
Yes.
Prepper amateur radio, not ham radio. The short version of this is all the stuff preppers need to know about handheld radios, amateur radio, ham radio, and none of the stuff they don't. It's all practical. The P could stand for prepper or for practical because they're the same thing. It's not studying about equations and the ionosphere and how long this antenna needs to be and how many volts and amps, blah, blah, blah. That's on your ham radio test, and you should take that test, and there are ways to pass that test without too much work. But this is practical stuff. What do preppers need to know to communicate by radio, including links to gear, suggested gear that we've tested that works well? I spent a lot of time and a lot of money figuring this out, and I made a bunch of mistakes that people out there don't need to make. So this is a phone app, and it's flashcards. It's free. Did I mention it's free? It is free. And you download, and it's not available yet. It'll be available end of 2019, beginning of 2020. It's an app that we've developed, And it's flashcards like, you know, what's a good radio for this use? Well, you'd want this kind of thing. And here's like a video on background. So it's just, and it gives you the ideas, and it takes, here's the thing. It takes away the fear of ham radio. It's this big topic. It's like amateur science or something, blah, blah, blah. It's complicated. It just sweeps all that stuff away. And that's going to be coming out at the end of the regular show. During the after show, we're going to be talking, or we're going to be doing the Patreon questions. Patreons asked us in the after show, and we will answer, not answer, we will mention the questions that Patreons have about amateur radio, because you're going to listen to this and you're going to go, oh, geez, I was wondering the same thing. So it's very cool. Another reason I bring up ham radio now is that it's the kind of topic that newbie preppers like John Mark would be interested in. And it's another example of, oh, geez, this is too complicated and time consuming and costly. And then we say, actually, it's not. And here's why. So anyway, very excited about that. And then Shelby, you've got some good news. You got a fun thing we're absolutely loving. Tell people about that.
Yeah, we have a sponsor, EMP Shield. We had them on recently. Andrew, who is one of their big wigs at their organization, EMP Shield. We're so excited. EMP Shield is a perfect prepping 2.0 idea and product. Why? Because EMPs, I'm not going to go into what they are and all of that. Go look it up. Is one of those things that we as preppers have always thought, at least for me, all right, that's something that we have to survive. It's nothing we can prevent. There's nothing we can do about it. We just have to prepare for the survival and the aftermath of it. Guess what? Prepping 2.0. New technology, new inexpensive technology that you can prevent it in your home and car. It's amazing. And we're so excited to be partnered with them. We're excited. Just excited. It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was a great show. We learned a lot, and you're going to hear a lot from us about EMP yes. Shield, because for relatively a small amount of money, you can EMP proof your home or your vehicle, and that's going to save a bunch of lives. And we are excited. We're part of their EMP awareness outreach program.
Yes,
and so we're excited about that. So you'll be hearing about that. Well, we always do the top 100 things that go the quickest in a collapse. And this is a topic I could talk for about 2 hours on, and I'm going to spare everyone that. Item 39 is spices. Now, you've heard us, and, you know, food flavoring sauces and things like that. You've heard us talk about this when it came to Food Preps 2.0, which is the nonfiction book about food preps that we're going to have out spring, summer of 2020. And so I've already gone over this, and Shelby's already gone over it. But Shelby, what's like 30, 45 seconds, something like that, on why spices are important?
Oh, just imagine just eating a potato with nothing on it. Just cooking beans with nothing on it. Yes, you need to eat during a collapse. You need to eat, and you will eat it because you're hungry. But how unexciting, how bland, how just it's not very good. But what's cool is the morality boost that spices and good tasting food can bring.
I think you mean more not morality, but morale.
Morale.
Yeah, I know what
goodness.
You meant. You're a little tired. It's okay.
Oh my gosh.
Is why I say it's more exciting. I know what you meant, morale, because when you and your crew or people you want to impress and make alliances with, when they have like some garlic salt or they have some salt and pepper, hot sauce for the beans and rice, it's a really big deal. Spices are incredibly cheap when you go and get them in bulk at Costco and elsewhere, not if you get the little things in the grocery store. Those are really expensive. Hot sauces, if you're into that, store forever because bacteria can't live in them because they're hot sauces. And easy to store. They don't go bad. They're inexpensive. And Marco Polo in 1200 or whatever, he walks whatever across Asia to go to China or something. I don't even know. And, that's right. Marco Polo, no relation to John Mark, by the way. That's a joke. Anyway, he goes, and what was he looking for? What was the big trade route? Spices.
He was not looking for new lands to conquer. He was looking for spices because all the rich kings and queens that sent him wanted them because they were that valuable.
And they will be very, very valuable in a collapse. You can barter with them. The American diet has a lot of flavorings and spices right now. People are accustomed to it. And it's so cheap, so storable. It takes up so little space. It's a no-brainer for yourself and for bartering. Well, okay, that's that. Now we have our guest, John Mark, our returning guest, John Mark. And I wanted to welcome you on and say hello to everybody, John.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's great to be here. And the first time I was on, my audience had great feedback for your show and the questions that you asked and the insights you had. So, excuse me, I'm looking forward to another great one today. I'm going to learn a lot this time as well, which I'm really looking forward to.
Which I love. And not only is it great that you're asking questions that a lot of other people have, what I like about you is that you have the humility and the honesty to say, geez, I don't know everything about something. Here are some questions. Yep. And I love that kind of honesty because we're about informing people. And often, Shelby and I won't know something and we'll say, gee, I don't know. And it's just a better way to get information out. Well, John, tell us a little bit about yourself and the various YouTube channels you have and the Patreon thing and BitChute and all the other ways people can reach you. Because I will say this, I'm a subscriber to your channels. And I love them. When I see that little icon on YouTube that says there's a new John Mark or Mark My Words video, I go and I watch it. So this is good stuff. This is Glenn Tate, like not only approved, but encouraged. So tell us how people can view your stuff.
I think the easiest way to tell people and the most long-lasting way to tell people with all the censorship going on is to go to my website, johnmarksays.com. And I have links to everything there. My two YouTube channels are John Mark and Mark My Words. I started a second YouTube channel just to kind of defend against in case my first YouTube channel experiences censorship because it's already experienced a little bit. So that's where you can find me. And I'm on BitChute as well. The easiest way to find that link is, again, from my website. For some reason, their search doesn't like to pull me up. So that's where I'm at. And just been doing YouTube basically since the beginning of the year, a little before the beginning of the year, and been really privileged to have a lot of great connections like you two fine folks.
Well, thank you. And I guess I should tell people sort of what the main gist or topic of John's videos are. It's the social, political, and demographic. Yeah, that's a thing, guys. I'm not afraid to say it. The demographics of why America's messed up and what that means and how that could create a collapse, will create a collapse. And then our topic for today that we'll talk about in a moment, how we can come out of this, what it's going to look like after what we'll describe as a civil war, could be domestic conflict. One of the other things I love about John Mark, and he completely shares Shelby and my view on this. We want peaceful separation, the blue and the red parts of the country. We do not want a war. I do not enjoy saying the term civil war because I have an inkling, but not full understanding of how awful it is. Friends of mine, I've never been to military law enforcement, friends of mine who are, you know, Green Berets and stuff and have seen this nastiness, and law enforcement officers that see daily yuckiness that I can't even imagine, they will be the first to tell you, you do not want this. And I listen to them out of respect for what they've done and seen. I say, okay, you guys know what you're talking about. I don't. So a fundamental point, peaceful separation is the goal. But John Mark knows and can articulate that that's probably not going to happen. And so once there's this separation, whatever we call it, civil war is as good of a term as any. What does the country look like, or parts of the country, a little bit of a foreshadowing there. What does it look like after Civil War II? So I would say, you know, John Mark, just take away the topic and describe what you talk about in your video, which is essentially entitled What Happens After the Civil War.
Absolutely. I can just give kind of an overview and you guys can feel free to interrupt me at any point. But once we're on the other side of some kind of a separation, secession movements by states, conflicts, something of that nature, which I think you did a good job of setting up, and I will second that completely. I advocate for peaceful separation. I also warn that it's quite likely not to be peaceful, or at least not completely peaceful. So that's a big reason that I'm encouraging people to be prepared, which is where you guys and your expertise comes in a great way. So, but after that, we basically have three challenges that we need to solve. One of them is a geographic challenge. What do we do with the land of the United States of America? Now, just so you know the context, And I think most of your audience will basically understand this. The grassroots right wing has the best chance of winning in some kind of a conflict scenario. Obviously, it's a little bit more complicated than we have the vast majority of the guns, but that really is what it comes down to. So,
agreed.
the point is, the grassroots right wing is very likely going to have some kind of say in decisions to make in how we want to set things up, what kind of demands we want to make if we're separating, whatever the case may be. So we have to have our act together, and we can't just be making it up as we go along. So the first challenge is, what do we do with the geography? The second challenge is, what do we do with the demographics, as you said, not out of some racist thing, but just the simple matter that non-white people vote 70% left, white people vote majority right, and they have done so in every election for decades, but it's not a clear-cut division. You've got obviously a good number of whites that do vote left-wing. You've obviously got some non-whites that vote right-wing as well. So what do you do with that kind of not super clear problem, right? And then the third challenge is, what kind of governmental system of rule of law can we put in place that would make it so that our descendants don't have to go through this again, and we don't make some of these same mistakes that got us in the problems that we're in? So does that make sense, the way I'm laying out kind of those three high-level challenges?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And it sure does. And I drill down into some detail in books 9 and 10 of my series, 299 Days. But you've got this fresh perspective, and you're looking at sort of the forest level. I went into the trees, but people need to be introduced at the forest level before the tree level makes any sense. So keep going. This is good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are people out there. Obviously, I'm not the only one thinking about this. The people I'm involved with are not the only one thinking about this. You guys have obviously thought through a lot of this as well, and your audience members have as well. But I think it's something that we really need to talk about, and that whatever conversations we're having around this are beneficial, because we need to have our act together and at least have an idea of our options, even if we're not saying, okay, we have to do this, because some of it may depend on how it plays out as well. But let's start with the first one. Let's start with the geography. The first thing I like to point out to people about the geography of the United States of America and where, let's just call them red people versus blue people, right? Conservatives versus liberals tend to live. So the first thing you notice, if you look at, you should go online and Google for a 3D population map by Republican versus Democrat. And what the first thing you notice is that the Democrats are, the vast majority of them are packed into a few mostly coastal cities. It's like coastal cities in Chicago. That's where the vast majority of them are. And so, yes, we have some liberals in urban centers in some of the cities in the middle. But if you look at this 3D map, it gives you an idea of how much of the population, what percentage of the population, and the great majority of them are in a few coastal cities. So one of the options is, we could basically say, okay, you guys can have these coastal cities as basically city states, right? And then it's interesting, if you look at like a California even, or a New York, a lot of the rest of those states it's red people. So they could perhaps join a neighboring state that's more of a red state, and you could basically just let the left have these coastal cities, maybe let them have Chicago if you want to, and you're basically divided by political ideology at that point without too much trouble. Now, the people who would be inconvenienced would be some of the liberals who live in the urban areas and some of the cities and more of the center of the country. But I'm going to be honest, I don't care about inconveniencing them, because they're trying to destroy everything I value. So
hallelujah.
It doesn't really bother me.
yeah, so that's, it's like, we'll help you pack the moving van, and we'll help you move. And
yes.
We're not going to kill you, because now people who have collaborated and committed war crimes and are traitors will be dealt with in a very just justice system. And I mean that sincerely. It will be fair.
Unlike the unjust system now, where they get a pass on everything, right?
Exactly. FBI director. And we will treat them well. But if you're not going to assimilate in our areas, you need to leave. And that's the polite way we're going to go about it. But it's firm. You do need to leave. And that is not a racial thing. That is a political thing. I would love nothing more, by the way, than conservative, you know, black and brown people to come into to my area. Would love it, as a matter of fact. But anyway, keep going. This is good stuff, because people need to think about this.
Yeah, just to have the options in your head. So that's one option. And just so people are aware as well, I think people, a lot of people are generally aware of this, but if you look at most cities actually in America, usually the center is blue, the urban area, actual, you know, like center of the city is blue. And then the suburbs are like 50-50 or maybe 60-40, 70-30, depending one way or the other, red and blue. And then the rural area is usually red. So that's usually how it goes down. That's just context there. Another option is we could just say red state, blue state. I mean, we already have the state lines. We have the state infrastructure. And our states are actually very big. Most American states are the size of European countries. And so it would not be a bad thing to, it would actually be a great thing in many ways to devolve most of the social policy just down to the states. You basically devolve the federal government and just let the federal government do like a couple things, like military, financial stuff, and we'd have to fix the finance system too. That's not a problem. But just let them keep that at the federal level and then just give the states all other power, especially for social policy, because that's where we're really having so much. It's economic policy too, but a lot of this tension is around social policy. And so the more you can localize that kind of stuff, the better, because then you have competition between states. States that are doing things really well are going to attract more high quality people. They're going to do better and better. People who make bad mistakes are going to be losing people. And so you have competition, you have more localized policy, and generally people are happier when there's more localized policy and they have more decision-making at the local level. So that's another option, is dividing by states, and or you could have, as I said earlier, some areas of one state might want to join an adjacent state. That type of thing could work as well. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Yes. Sounds an awful lot like a book series I'm very familiar with. The name of my book series, A Great State. And it means a great state, and what you just described is what I wrote about, the division of the states between sanctuary states and great states. And my collapse has states and the wrangling that happens, especially when you have states that are predominantly red with a blue urban center, and how the state people, you know, and you kind of end up with a state civil war that way. And also the wrangling for the military. What if you're on a military base in a blue state, and the feds want their military back, and the state doesn't want to give it up? So this is very familiar to me. So and we have about a minute left. Great. So go ahead, John Mark.
A minute left, you said?
Yes.
I'll just follow up with that. It's amazing to hear. It's not surprising, actually. It shouldn't surprise me that folks like yourself, there are people out there. It's great to see that there are other people out there thinking along the same lines. You guys have already written books about it, right? So when I see that a lot of us are thinking along the same lines, I think, okay, we're on the right track. When other quality people are thinking the same way, that's what I think to myself, is we're thinking in the right way. And it's great to know that you guys are even have books written about that. It's fantastic.
Well, we have a few seconds before we go into segment two of the regular show. I will plant this seed in your head, John Mark, and that is, state boundaries might be a good starting point, but there are a lot of us, like Shelby and me, who live in Washington State. We live in the rural parts, and I wouldn't want to be in a blue state. I might be inconvenienced, but I guess inconvenience goes both ways. So when we come back, I'd like to ask you a question about starting with state lines, but not necessarily sticking strictly to them. And so here we are. Stick around for segment two. We just got started, guys. We just got started.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. .com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online at northwestretentionsystems.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here, joined by our awesome guest, John Mark, who we're having a great conversation about what Civil War II will look like. And we just were talking about how there could be a division amongst the states, which just sent me into goodnessville, because it tells me, yay, I'm not the only one that thinks about these things. I wrote a book series about it called A Great State. Keep going on that topic, though, John Mark.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to agree with what was said right before the break, which is that the whole point of what we're trying to do here is get people to where they're happy under their leadership, right?
Amen. So,
you know, if you've got a rural area of a blue state, like Washington State, right, we don't want those people living under leftist rule if they don't want to. And it'd also be great to not make people move geographically. I mean, people are sorting themselves geographically anyway, but it'd be great to not make every right winger in Eastern Washington move to a different place if they want to live under leadership they like. So in my mind, it's a better idea to just say, listen, let's let the red part of Washington join a neighboring state. That's much easier than making however many million people move. So I don't know what you guys think about that, but that's my take on that.
Totally agree. And in Washington State, we have a very mature movement, the Liberty State movement, which would be to create a new state. Notice I just said create a new state, which is in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. It's yes. Like lawful because it's in the Constitution. Create a new state, not secede, not start a war, create a new state. And then basically the people in Eastern Washington who are very conservative, this is true all over the country. There's upstate New York is much more conservative than New York City. All these, you know, there's the state of Jefferson, which is Northern California, all these things. It's create a new state. And then what we're talking about and what John Mark just mentioned is basically adding to that Liberty State to have it include either as another state or adjoining Liberty would be the rural parts of Washington. Or if it's the New York example, you've got, you know, upstate New York is a new state and maybe part of a conservative part of, you know, I don't know, Erie, Pennsylvania, I'm making this up, that borders it, joins. So you don't stick to current state boundaries dogmatically. Although I would say this, if I had to choose between the current system or individual currently configured states getting to run their own affairs, I would go with currently configured states running their own affairs. I mean, dividing up states is kind of the next level of priority and goodness. If I have to live in a blue state here in Washington, I'll deal with that. It'll either work, or if the leftists are as oppressive as they generally are looking at history, then we'll be moving to a red state. But these are the things we're thinking about. Keep going with this. This is fabulous.
Yep, absolutely. And what you're saying is very close to what someone I'm involved with pretty heavily, Kurt Doolittle, says, is a really smart guy who really thinks things through thoroughly. And he says something very similar to that. You could form new states. You can even have counties get together and say, we're going to form a new state. I don't see why that couldn't be done. That could be a great solution. So, and then the other option that after a shakeout of some sort is the grassroots right wing could just end up ruling over the whole thing. Now, I'm not going to get into that too much. I mean, that would be kind of a pain to try to rule over the blue areas because you have the same problem we have now, which is they're going to be trying to rebel against it all the time. So, you know, my sentiment is that it's better to do some kind of a separation. But that's another thing that could end up happening. And if we did that, we'd really have to have a robust system of law and government that would be able to withstand the opposition that they would throw at it. So that's the only other option I would mention there.
That is a possibility. I hope it doesn't happen because we're all about peaceful separation and areas getting to run themselves and not being ruled by people they despise. And obviously, yeah, the Chicago despises traditional America. And I'm generalizing. There's probably great people right now in Chicago listening to this saying, hey, I'm not a dirtbag. I'm not a liberal scumbag. And they're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's true.
But they'll also say to you, I live in a...
Yeah.
Conservative here, exactly.
And you cut out a little bit there, Shelby, but that's okay. But I don't think, and this sounds weird maybe, but as much as I'm all about, quote, winning and everything, if I had a choice of America looking like what I want it to look like, all 50 states, I would actually decline that invitation because people in Chicago should be allowed to live like the failing socialist system that they seem to want. And by the way, after about 6 months, they're going to be trying to like immigrate into other places. And then we get to decide whether we want them. And by the way, the answer ought to be no. We're not going to take your messed up philosophy. People who are dependent by and large and who have bad attitudes by and large and have nothing to offer, say the state of Northern Indiana, right? That's, you know, and that's functioning along, it's cruising along, everything's pretty good in Northern Indiana. And then all these Chicagoans want the free stuff that they just bankrupted their own system for. So I'm not saying be nice. I'm saying let them, it's like being a parent. Let the socialist areas who are like children go ahead and build their tree fort and, you know, try to live on their allowance and do their own goofy, idealistic, dumb stuff. And then when they fail, of course, with children, you actually love them and you don't want them to, like, you know, wither away and die. But when they fail and they don't get any of the good stuff. So what do you think about that, John Mark, about like the morality of the right and the political philosophy that we have? We probably wouldn't even want to rule over all the blue areas, even if we somehow physically could.
Yeah, it would create a whole host of problems. You're kind of keeping the same problem that you're trying to eliminate, which is making people miserable. And so if they want to try their leftist thing, like you said, they're going to be miserable after a while. And, you know, that's fine. And then when they want to come back in, you know, sorry, we drew the borders. We're not going to put the risk on our descendants again of you doing this thing that you seem to instinctively do, which is you want this leftism thing. So the answer is no, we're not going to let you in. But I think you're right. I mean, I prefer to rule than to be ruled. But yes. I think the ideal situation, as you say, is probably to separate and let people go their own ways.
And this very issue plays out in books 8 and 9 of the 299 day series, when the issue of New Washington, which is rural, good, patriot Washington, has to decide whether they're going to try to go into Seattle, which is messed up, obviously, and occupy it, or let them just descend but not allow them to come in. And there's a debate. There's both sides of this question are debated via dialogue through the characters. So it's a pretty big issue, and I think we're going to be confronting it. But you're the guest, and I should try not to talk. John Mark, keep talking.
No, it's good when you talk, because I think it's good for my audience as well to hear that you guys are really thinking about this. You've actually written books about it with specifics. I think that's really great, and really great for everybody to get their heads into. And then the last thing I would just mention is the demographic issue. And so I won't repeat what I said earlier, but you basically have a demographic issue where a majority of whites and a majority of non-whites vote a different way, but it's not a perfectly clear-cut difference. So what you actually see is if you take care of the geographic issue the way we're talking about, the demographic issue largely takes care of itself, because if you look at a demographic map, it's basically the same thing as the political map. And again, you can do what we're talking about, where you can have self-sorting. And if you take care of the geographic thing and let the liberal voters live in the areas where they already live for the most part, and the conservatives the same thing, you're going to end up with somewhere around 80% white people and 20% non-white people in the red areas. and obviously great majority. Well, I wouldn't say great majority. It would probably be majority non-whites in the blue areas. And that's fine. To me, that is giving people what they want according to their political orientation, their political instincts, and it largely takes care of the demographic problem. So I'd be interested in you guys' thoughts on that.
I do have a thought on that, and this is what I think could be like the wrench in this, and I don't want it to be the wrench, but I think it is. In the big cities right now, especially here on the West Coast, I know it's everywhere, humongous homeless population, and they're homeless, but they're opioid addicted homeless population. It's ridiculous, and it is so huge that there's no quick fix. This is going to take decades to get these people this problem fixed. And now we have, you know, people, there's whole jokes out there, people pooping on the street. It's becoming a huge issue. There's rats in the City Hall of LA, all of that. So here's my concern with this model is that we now have liberals who have created this in cities and they are sick of the living conditions and they will move because of the, there was a study done by a local news channel in Portland a few years ago that 66% of those polled had considered seriously in the last 12 months to consider moving because of the homeless population, because it was such a problem. These people just camp everywhere, they poop everywhere, they leave a mess everywhere, needles everywhere, they're zombies. And when those people move, now they're in my great state. They're now in my back. And they bring with them their voting record. They're going to vote in that which just created the population, the homeless population they just created. What are your thoughts on that, John Mark?
I agree. And I think the only solution is what you or Glenn said earlier, which is you just say no. You're not allowed to move. You can't come in. And if they try to do the illegal thing, you know, you do whatever you have to do on the border. But, you know, we're not going to be living with the consequences of your idiocy. It's just the simple answer is no. I think that's the only way to solve that.
Well, and that wouldn't be reciprocity or reciprocal behavior, and that would violate proprietarianism. But Google that term and watch John Mark's videos on it.
And read my book. Seriously, I talk on all of these things.
Well, the proprietarianism is a political idea, and it would take about 4 hours to talk about. And quite honestly, not everyone listening is probably into the details of it, but I urge people to go onto John Mark's various channels. You mentioned Kurt Doolittle. It's a fascinating idea, proprietarianism, as a way of governing afterwards. And I'll just leave it at that because we can only talk about it a little bit, but it's a pretty intriguing idea. And you mentioned, by the way, both of you mentioned just not letting those people in. Another way to do it that may shake out is what I was talking about earlier. Actually, Shelby talks about in her books where she coined the phrase domestic immigration, much like she coined the phrase sanctuary state. I can prove it. She wrote it in a draft of a book. I Googled it at the time, and there were no hits on sanctuary state. Now it's like a household term. But anyway, another term she comes up with when she describes how the states will interact and the refugees and the immigrants will interact. Immigrants meaning intrastate immigrants, like people from California moving to Idaho, for example, domestic immigration. And one of the things that states could do is not allow either people to physically come in, or you could allow some people to come in, but you're kind of like a new citizen with kind of like a green card. You're a legal immigrant, but you can't vote. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, this is America's a democracy. No, it's not, dopehead. It is a republic. And you could say, you guys get to live in the good conditions here in our red state, whether it's a new state or an existing one. Guess what? In Boise, Idaho, we don't have 60,000 homeless people walking around like zombies. But guess what, Californian? We don't want 60,000 people walking around like zombies here in Boise, Idaho. So the reason we had that, or you had that in California, is you dumbos voted for that. And guess what? You don't get a vote here because it ain't happening. So I could see that kind of thing. One other practical issue, and this is something for people to figure out. I mean, it's beyond this high level thing. By the way, it's successfully been figured out throughout history, so human beings are capable of this. What do you do about military bases and installations? I'm thinking of California. I'm thinking of all the military installations there, especially in the San Diego area. You know, if California is hostile to the United States, like as a separate country or, you know, who knows, declaring hostilities, what do you do about Camp Pendleton, where you've got thousands and thousands of United States Marines? And the reason I say it's beyond the scope of this, you know, discussion today is that it is. And second of all, we would figure this out. That's what treaties are for. This is what statesmen are for. This happens all the time. Russia, to an extent, well, Soviet Union, to an extent, when it broke up, went through this process. And for example, Georgia and the Baltic countries, you know, there were Soviet missile bases in countries that now are part of NATO. How did that get resolved? People resolve stuff is the answer. So people are smart. They would have an interest in not having this problem. They would know the stakes of the problem because they just lived whatever the fight was that created this situation. So those of you that say, oh, there's military bases and how will we do that? How will we divide up Social Security liability? How will we do da-da-da? Guess what, guys? Those are details. They're huge details. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that it would get worked out because people are capable of this, looking at history, and we would be no different. And Shelby has a point to make, I believe.
And I know we want to get on to another topic, but I think that what I want to point out is the contentiousness of the left in current times over that very thing. Perfect example. President Trump, 6 months, 8 months ago, said he wanted to call on the National Guard to help protect our southern border. And Governor Kate Brown of Oregon said, you're not taking my National Guard. Ain't doing it. I won't allow my troops to go. There's already been some wrangling and angling over that very issue. And it's interesting how the left-leaning governors of the left-leaning coast are that whole resist thing that they came up with right when President Trump was elected. Is create whether you, I know people get mad at us because we talk about politics, but this is the world we live in. That angst that those left coast governors are creating are going to spark something, and they need to be careful because do you see how all of these issues are related to exactly to Civil War II? I mean, it's sad. They're creating it. Yeah.
And why to prep as a result?
Why to prep? Exactly.
John, Mark, any other thoughts on what happens after the Civil War?
No, that was a great – the two things you guys just touched on were perfect. We just need to have some better governmental systems. The only thing I'll add to that is – and again, you know, the original Constitution was pretty darn good for its time. But, you know, it was 200 years ago, so I think there's some things we can do better. And the thing I always just say is we grassroots right-wingers need a system that is more suited to our strengths because we have a disadvantage against the left. Yes. In political advocacy, because they feel, as individuals on the grassroots left, they feel a great need for this political advocacy, because it gives them what I call fake status. Mm-hmm. Grassroots right wingers, we're more like I'm happy with my family, and I don't want to go bother anybody. I don't want to go protest. I'm happy with my job, with my place in the hierarchy. I don't feel this big need to go do political advocacy. I just do it out of necessity because the left is driving me nuts. So we have to have a political system that is more suited to our strengths. That's basically more strict. So when you mentioned proprietarianism, that is a great idea along that line. And then I completely agreed with what you just said, Shelby, as well. So I won't need to add to that.
Awesome.
Love it. The second part of this show, and we have about 8 minutes in the regular show. Once again, most of the good stuff is in the after show. We don't plan it that way. It's just we have amazing guests and great topics, and there's so much information you can't cram it into the 52 minutes and 5 seconds of airtime on the regular show. So, but we'll start with John Mark has a series of questions from the perspective of a newbie prepper, and he's going to ask us. We'll give brief answers. A lot of the answers, by the way, might be, oh, we did that in episode 7. Go ahead and check it out. Now, one thing I will mention to set the table here, and well, actually, John will describe it and set the table for himself. But John, you are a newbie prepper. You're exploring this. You've realized that stuff may not, you know, work well, and there may be a breakdown, and you need to provide for your family and have a plan. Describe like what brought you to the idea that you might need to prep and where you're at in your prepping, because that'll set the stage for all the questions you ask.
Absolutely. I'm a fairly newbie prepper. I mean, I have a brain that can kind of try to figure out some common sense stuff. You know, I need some food, I need some water, but I really don't know much about the field. So that's where connecting with you guys and your expertise is perfect. And I can tell you for a fact, there's a lot of people out there that are like me right now that are realizing, oh man, things really could get bad. I mean, before, you know, it's kind of easy to make fun of the preppers sometimes, like, oh, you know, they're just overreacting or they're afraid. Well, it's turning out the preppers have actually been right all along. So, and a lot of people are coming to that realization. And I can tell you from other people that I've been doing interviews, they're like, you know, I was trying to tell people for a long time, and now suddenly so many more people are listening because of the state of what's going on in America. So there's a lot more people like me out there. So hopefully this could be helpful to people. I know that your audience may know more about some of these things, or probably does, than I do. But if you've got friends out there that are fairly new, you know, to the, all of this, like us, and there's a lot of people, it's ripe for this. So hopefully this can be helpful. But I'm just my situation. As I said, I'm fairly new to this. I'm realizing things may go bad. I really need to have protection and provision for my family, for myself. I'm basically in a suburban area, and I have a family, right? That's kind of my situation, and I think there's a lot of people like that. And so my first question for you guys would be, my overall plan is if something were to go bad in the city where I'm living in a suburb of, if something were to go bad there, my plan is to get out and take my family out of the populated area if possible and get to a more rural area, and then also try to have some preparations in case I can't. So any thoughts about that overall strategy? And you can touch on what's better for rural folks and urban folks as well if you want, but what do you think of that as strategy? What do you guys recommend as far as just physical placement of where you try to be?
Awesome. John Mark, I'm going to answer that one. This is Shelby. I've been in your boat. I've lived in the urban city, and I've felt that I lived in Portland, and I felt the riots. You know, they're right there. I'm like, when do I bug out? When do I bug out? And you are thinking along the same lines I did. And I think anyone who lives in a suburban city, and especially any of the collapsing, what I call collapsing cities, Chicago, New York, Baltimore, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, any of those, you absolutely need to plan on a rural place to land and start working on that now, making it so that you, whether it's, you know, an Aunt Louise that lives retired on her farm 50 miles away, or it's in another state, have that in place, set up, this is book one of my book series. The main character sets up a place to land when she feels the collapse happens that she feels is coming, and negotiate it with the family members or the friends or whoever. Hey, I want to come here when the collapse happens. What can I do to help prepare it? Put food there, put things in place there. But yes, you're absolutely right. What in your current situation, in your suburban home, you need to prep and have a food supply. I always do the 3 day, you know, the typical Red Cross, have 3 days of water and food in case a big whatever happens. Yes, have that. But try for 30 or 60 day food supply. Because ask people who just survived the hurricane in Florida or the Bahamas, they're wishing they had more. They really, but it's hard to do that in your home. And you have to really do it in secret. Don't let your neighbors see you coming in the house with buckets of, Mountain House food, because those neighbors will turn on you when they get hungry. You've got to kind of do it sly. And kind of on the, you know, be cool about it and don't let people know because suddenly your neighbors will become your enemies. And that's the big problem, and I think, in the cities. And I'm basing that upon what I've seen happening in Venezuela and Bosnia. So, Glenn, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Both of you are right to get out of both cities and suburbs. One of the things that we often underplay is the danger of being in a suburb. And I used to live in a suburb, Olympia, and it seemed pretty okay. And so I got kind of, complacent about it. And then we had a Patreon ask a question, which we get the best Patreon questions. They spark all kinds of great thoughts. And he described why the suburbs maybe they're not going to be as bad as the cities, but they're going to be bad. And he said, it's about a 50-50 mix, red and blue, and the percentage of people in suburbs, depending on what state you're in, who own guns is relatively high, more disposable income, more guns. And he said, I see a lot of the fights, the really bad fights, because in the cities, it's over after 6-7 days. In Chicago, the El Rukins or whoever's replaced them will just kill everybody. So, I mean, it's not going to last long. But in the suburbs, it's going to be a different story. And so he elaborated, and I forget which episode it was. It was one of the after shows. I apologize for not having that handy. He described why that would be in the suburbs such a problem. So the suburbs are even more dangerous than you may think. As far as getting out, the first thing is having a place to go. And if you don't have a place to go, just go. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. Just go. I think we would have more warning than we think when some of these things are falling apart. For example, Ferguson, if Ferguson is a national level riot slash problem, that unfolded over a number of days. And I think a lot of preppers get really caught up in the idea of what if there's an EMP and all of a sudden we're back in the Stone Age in 500 trillionths of a second, right? However long that takes for that EMP to fry things, or not if you have EMP shield. But so it may not be as instantaneous as everybody thinks. So I guess you should have an instantaneous plan for an instantaneous disaster, but start with thinking that there'll be enough time to actually move stuff out because it's more doable and it's not this high hurdle to climb, this big mountain of impossibility. So you're right. Definitely get out. As far as getting out goes, we actually need to get out of this segment and go to the after show. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.